why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Live at Keeneland, Breeders' Cup 2022. Nick Tamaro will join us in about 10 minutes. Nick is stuck on the freeway in Houston. So it's not a parade. They're not, the Astros haven't won anything yet. Still, after last night's rainout, we'll be at Citizens tonight for game three. So what we'll do is we'll take a minute and have the opportunity to congratulate John Toscano from the win on Saturday. Running son of a gun. The story gets better and better, John. Congratulations.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for the congrats.
You know, we I even called you when you didn't win. So we certainly had to call with after this performance, and it's just, I mean, it's a little bittersweet at the same time. I mean, we got to acknowledge that, but the way he did it, John, I mean, he just basically refused to let Eastern Bay get past him.
Exactly. It was a very game performance on his part. You know, I don't think he saw the other horse, and once he got headed and then he spotted him, he came back again to beat him. He's a gutty little guy. He really gives 100% every time he runs.
Well, and we got to acknowledge the contribution, obviously, of Kendrick Carmouche, too, because Kendrick, with those long arms of his, I mean, he was extending him, too.
Kendrick fits him very well. He works him in the morning. He loves the horse. He says he's a really nice horse. So he's proving his mettle right now.
Take us back, and you know, when I mentioned the bittersweet aspect of this, and of course Scott Zimmerman's passing, and his widow was there, and remind everybody about the identification of running son of a gun, and you know, reaching in to take him.
Yeah, well, we took him New Year's Eve, as a matter of fact, on the 31st of December. And Scott was alive at that time. And Scott really loved his horse. They used to stand by his stall and feed him peppermints all day long. And they'd admire him in the stall. And he really, like, he had a sixth sense with him. And it's a sin that he passed just prior to starting running good back in the spring. So I think Scotty's still around. And I think he's riding them, if you ask me.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, and you know, the race that I had to you know, talk to you about was the Jerkins, when he was just he was so terrific in defeat. Jack Christopher and Gunite. I mean, you want to talk about keeping elite company. But you know, you say you know he started to run well. You know, the effort in the allowance win, then the Gold Fever second. There was that crazy scenario with Charge It in the Dwyer where he basically got a second, but as far as he was concerned, he probably thought he won because Charge It was 25 lengths out in front. Exactly. Right?
Yes. But I'll tell you, he's kept great company all went to come along. Those trios can really run. Jack Christopher, Gunite, I mean, they're really nice apprentices, so it was, you know, coming off of them, he had a little bit of an edge. And he ran with the old horses, and he run well. So I guess he can take the rise to the older mob.
Well, and you know there is one more big sprint opportunity for 3-year-olds at the end of the year in California. I don't know if that topic has come up, but he certainly ran well enough at 7/8 to think about him for the Malibu. Now he is a gelding, so he's going to be around. So you know it's strictly a matter of finding fun places to run him and enjoying this. But one thing, and I don't remember if I brought this up with you, John, after we talked, you know, around the time of the Jerkins. But he was a May foal, and so it's almost not surprising that you know he's just getting, you know, getting better now, late in the season. He's catching up to everybody physically.
Exactly. You know, as you said, he's a late foal, and now he's starting to blossom. So you know, I really think that's a factor with all of this.
Well,
but, the trio race are really basically gone, except for the Malibu. Then they got the Discovery at the Aqueduct, but that's going a mile and eighth. I don't know if he wants to go that far, but it might be an easy spot. So we have to contemplate that and see which way we're going to go. If we keep him sprinting or try to stretch him. He is a gun runner, and they all can run. He had a hell of a first crop gun runner.
To say the least, and here's a horse that had already been multiple graded stake placed, right? He'd had second and 3/3 in graded stake, including the grade one, and now wins a grade three for himself.
Exactly. So you know, the future looks bright. Let's put it that way.
Well, and you know, I don't know if you had a chance to later on to hear what was going on the Fox show. But Andy, in fact, Andy Serling will be with us at 11. But, you know, Andy, like so many others, John, just doting on you and on your family. Mig yesterday, I mean, this is one of those situations where after a lifetime on the racetrack and a family, basically, that is synonymous with the racetrack, a horse like this comes along. I mean, how many horses do you figure in your career have you claimed?
I've claimed about 30, 40 horses throughout my career.
Just but, I would have thought more. I would have expected even more than that.
It's possible. You know, I never kept a record of it, but there were a lot of claims. Let's put it that way, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. And so for this, you know, for this horse to come along. And, you know, the one, of course, the one that I think this was your second graded stake win. And we think back to the wonderful Sinister G, who won the Spiral, who won the Lane's End.
Yep, he won the Lane's End back in 2004.
Well, what do they say, John? Long time between drinks in the graded stake company.
But no, he's a heck of a claim. You don't claim horse like this every day, and we were very fortunate to get him. So you know, let's try to make the best of it.
How many people went in on this horse?
I believe I had one shake, one other person. It was a two-way shake on him, I believe.
Well, down the road, there'll be 17 or 18 different people who said that they lost the shake. So great. Running son of a gun, Kendrick Carmouche, and what is Scott's wife's name?
Karen.
There you go. Well, John, I couldn't let the week go on without getting you on and congratulating you. We'll look forward to whatever is next. I mean, would you think about the Cigar Mile with him?
Well, it's a possibility. If it comes up weak, it depends on who's coming for the race. That's a big factor, and I'll feel the race out, and it's a possibility. Let's not rule it out.
All right.
But we got the full highway at the end of October, end of November, I'm sorry. We got the Cigar Mile the first day in December. You got the Malibu. So there are a lot of options. You got the Discovery. So, we'll pick and choose and see which is the better spot for them.
Well, whatever you choose, you've got yourself a horse that is going to be around a long time, and for fans to rally around. 97 buyer, he basically matches his career top that he got in the Jerkins, and running son of a gun also proves how tough he is with that craning of the neck. He absolutely was sticking that nose for the wire. John Toscano, you feeling all right, John? I know you had a little
yeah,
episode a couple of weeks ago.
Beat again.
Yeah?
Yeah, episode, but some health problems, but we'll try to correct that and go on with life.
Well, when you got a horse like this, you got plenty of reason to stay around.
You got that right.
John Toscano, right. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you.
Not at all. John Toscano, everybody, and really a story that that's what everybody, from an ownership standpoint, you dream about. This was a $40,000 claim, and, obviously the sadness associated with Zimmerman's passing, he would be absolutely having a ball with this horse, so... really, really nice, John Toscano, and he ended up turning back Lynn Cash. I mean, I'm looking forward to talking to Lynn and getting his story out too, because he's emergent, and he came within a nose of sweeping both graded stakes on Saturday in New York.
Anytime that happens, it's a good day.
Well, that Double Crown, 42-1, and Eastern Bay was a lot less, and Eastern Bay was pretty easy to include in this spot, and good old 8-year-old Greeley and Ben, he was fourth. This was a very good running of the Bull Ruler, so I wanted to make sure to get John Toscano on, and that bought us 10 minutes to then see about Nick. Oh my gosh!
He's still on the. On the
let's
beltway.
See. Did he? Is he still on the Nick? What do you? I mean, he might be listening. let's dial him. Let's see if he picks up. He's ready, and if he doesn't, he's not. It'll make it very simple, and we'll vamp for a couple more minutes. But that was a perfect opportunity to get John Toscano in, and I think this is a good opportunity to talk to. To talk to Nick. Are you all right? You ready to talk or no?
Yeah, I'm good to go.
Excellent. All right. Nick, good morning. And first of all, terrific job with the morning line. And it seems like complaints were kept to a minimum.
I don't know if everybody just gave up on saying anything about it, or as that comes out of my mouth, I think there's no chance that's true. But I'm glad to see a lot of people have been complimentary. It is a very arduous and very thankless task. But I think it worked out well. I formulated a decent plan as far as how to do it, and took it step by step and consulted with the right people after I was done to make sure I got things right. And the crew at the Breeders' Cup was really helpful in terms of giving me opportunities to make whatever little adjustments I needed to. And so hats off to them. And I was
not prepared necessarily for doing the undercard races yesterday with handmade PPs. But I got it done.
I'd sort of forgotten about that myself now that you say it. And the Friday card has got five maiden. There's a maiden and some allowance races, quite nice, and also the marathon. And then three straightforward races on Saturday surrounding the nine. And you're right. How did you deal with that? Because the PPs didn't really come out until hours later.
Yeah, there's a magical way that you can make PPs if you have access to the right information, and luckily I did, and was fortunate enough to get in there and get that done, because with all due respect to Equibase and everybody there, I don't know if I would have been able to make an accurate line on some of those races with just those. I kind of needed to supplement those Equibase PPs. The other thing was that there are a couple of two-year-old races, one of which I believe is the first on a Saturday, where you've got some big purchase prices from high profile barns. And obviously, I mean, I had no workout information at all, but the $2.3 million Baffert horse on Saturday, I went ahead and went out on a limb and figured that he's going to be the favorite.
Well, and that group that it's going to go, seven eighths That's Thursday's. It is 7/8 actually. Yeah.
And then the second on Saturday, incidentally, the race with Messier is terrific. There's 14 horses in there, a lot of contention. Horses that were briefly mentioned as Breeders' Cup possibles are in that field, so it's a really, really terrific race. The undercard races came up just amazingly strong, and I didn't realize they were going to run a race after the Classic.
Yeah.
So after the Classic, they're running an older female turf race, and Chad Brown is bringing back a horse that I felt like a dozen people asked me where she was over the course of the last 5 months in Shantasara, who has not been seen since she finished second in the Jenny Wiley.
Well, and it's funny, when I put up some things overnight, one of the comments on Facebook, Allison McGahey, Mrs. Shug, Allison said, we're in the 12th on Saturday. And so I went and looked, and sure enough, and I was like, oh, this is actually a quality bunch too. So yeah, it's funny because this Breeders' Cup, and I also, one of the things I did early this morning as well, I guess I thought I had these printed, but I must have left them at home. I printed the 2015 and the 2020 results, the charts, because I wanted to go back and see how some of the post positions played and so forth, and the way those races turned out. And there's plenty. That's an exercise that is worth doing when you then compare and contrast. I mean, because there are horses, Nick, domestic spending drawing the 14 doesn't feel like it dooms him. Some other horses that drew wide, that might be a little compromised. Anything from that standpoint that you were worried about adjusting?
Well, I can tell you that the adjustments I made were Raging Sea in the Juvenile Fillies. She went from 6 to 8. Her drawing the 14 is tough. Chad drew the 14 in two different races, and honestly, it's a much bigger problem, in my opinion, for Raging Sea than it is for domestic spending. I also moved Basil Martini in the Juvenile Fillies turf from 10 to 15 when she drew the 14. I think I may have had her a little low anyway, so I was kind of looking for an excuse to bump her price up a tad. And the only other adjustment I made was there was a one in there was a horse drawn inside, I believe, in one of the sprints that I bumped up. But those are the two that stick out. The interesting thing, one of the more interesting things about this Breeders' Cup to me is that the Europeans as a whole, if you watch their replays and you look closely at their running lines, they have significantly more speed than a lot of what we've generally gotten. Now, will that translate to the kind of speed that we'll see actually influence the races? That remains to be seen. But, I mean, one race after another, you're looking at these horses, and as I was putting the lines together and was trying to get a feel for them and watching replays, the comments that you saw were prominent, led, made all, and I thought, wow, I mean, this is just a really different group of international horses than we've seen before. And you know, look, maybe it has something to do with what you've just kind of alluded to, which is that I do think the Keeneland Turf is a course where being a little forwardly placed is probably helpful. And, you know, they're learning more about American-style racing, where we generally race at a much stronger early pace than they do overseas. So worlds will collide in that respect. And, I mean, the two horses that I'm probably referring to as far as the turf goes are the Platinum Queen and Highfield Princess, because the Platinum Queen and Highfield Princess both come in with these pretty incredible credentials, and they're both speed horses, right? And, you know, Highfield Princess probably has a little bit more rateability, if you will, but the Platinum Queen wants to be forward. Well, so does Tyler's Tribe, so does Speedboat Beach, so do a few others, and the problem is two of those horses are drawn immediately to her inside. So, I mean, right from the start in these Breeders' Cup races, you're going to have a short-priced horse that really is going to take the worst of it in terms of race flow.
That's a perfect segue, Nick, to what we do every year at this time after the draw day, and that is to walk through the 14 races and assess the pace scenario and how the draw ended up affecting that. And you bring up the germane point. You know, not only is there Tyler's Tribe in the 10, Speedboat Beach in the 11 hole, and Platinum Queen in the 12, but Sharp as Attack is a horse with early foot as well in the 9. So the speed is going to light out from the outside, and you would think that a horse like, I don't know, Joel Rosario on Private Creed has got to be licking his chops to basically set up and save ground and let those horses come. It looks like a perfect Joel Rosario moment for an inside-outside trip.
Yeah, that was something I realized pretty early, that it felt like this horse was going to get all kinds of the right setup. The problem is that his figures are slow in comparison to a lot of other horses in here, but that might just be mitigated enough by the potential race flow. And I think if you want to take that approach, I'm never going to make a strong argument against anyone that's telling me they're taking Rosario with a one-run closer in what's likely to be a fast-paced race. That's the Rosario situation, if you can put it into a nutshell. So I agree. I thought Private Creed made a lot of sense for that reason, and I think there's going to be a little bit of a nod to some of the horses that have performed well locally. I know we've talked for years and years about how peculiar the turf in Kentucky can be, specifically at Keeneland. So yeah, I mean, I thought one of the more difficult draws in here was Love Rain's getting two, because she probably isn't quick enough to get loose, but you run a massive risk if you let a lot of them to your outside kind of get away from you, because you're really gonna lose a lot of ground.
You know who is going to be boxcars in here, and another one of those low-key stories that is really kind of nice, American Apple. With Dan Leach and Gerardo Corrales. And for those that have gotten into the figs, American Apple is as fast as a lot of the, you know, low-priced obvious types, and might also get a very nice behind-the-speed trip. And don't be afraid, for those of you that have never seen Corrales, don't be afraid, because he is a confident handler.
Yeah, no, I would have told you to be afraid of Cancel. So this was, and I'm not want to dump on Eric, but an off the pace horse on the turf can be tricky. And Corrales is very, very good. I think a good decision was made by the connections of Oxymore to cut him back. He's probably likely to sit back and make one run. And that'll really benefit him as well with the way this race should be run. So yeah, the American Apple quandary was, how much are you buying the Matron? Right. I mean, if you're buying the Matron hook, line and sinker, you're 100% betting American Apple, because this horse is going to be still going to be a big price and comes in off a race that, if you're believing in it, it's as fast as anything anybody in here has run.
The turf sprint, and I suppose we'll wait to hear more about Persian Force and Lady Hollywood and dramatized Mischief Magic as well, the Europeans that are lesser known other than the Platinum Queen. We'll count on
you. I think there's some info to get out about those. You know, Persian Force was one that I took a bit of a liking to. He was third behind Blackbeard in the middle part. Blackbeard was briefly mentioned as a possible for this race and was obviously going to be a major player. Mischief Magic finished just behind him. I think we're going to see just an all-out assault on the betting windows by the public for every Charlie Appleby horse. And I tried to kind of bake that into some of the morning lines. And contrary to what some people out there may think, he's not going to win every race he has a horse in.
Well, let's turn to the second cup race on Friday. It's the Juvenile Fillies, full field of 14. You mentioned the adjustment on Raging Sea, who's coming off the nice effort in the Alcibiades. The favoritism, though, goes to Chocolate Gelato out of the Frisette win. This is one of those juvenile spots, along with the boys' race. We'll get to Blazing Sevens in a minute. But, you know, a horse that's going to make the two-turn transition, a practical joke out of a Candy Ride mare. And that's where we start this discussion. Wonder Wheel, of course, coming out of the Alcibiades. Timeform U.S. shows this as a fast pace with You're My Girl for John Terranova stretching out off the Frisette placement behind Chocolate Gelato. What do you see? How do you see him spilling out of the gate, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to go fast in here. And so what I did with the adjustment upward on Raging Sea was I actually made an adjustment downward on Chop Chop and made Chop Chop 4-1. I know that it's never terribly prudent to make a horse a shorter price that lost to another horse when the longer priced horse ran better. But Chop Chop feels to me like a horse that is going to be just really heavily embraced by the betting public. She's got that sort of attractive running style for this particular race, given the way it shapes up on paper. It's Rosario for Cox. These are really popular connections. She seems pretty obvious, right? It seems hard to take Wonder Wheel and trust that she's going to be able to set the pace in here and go on with it. I do expect that they'll probably take a little bit more conservative approach with her. And, you know, if You're My Girl goes and they feel a little pressure from Grand Love, I could see Tyler maybe taking Wonder Wheel in hand and trying to get her to sit third or fourth. I just don't think that'll help her chances. So I think when push comes to shove, you're basically figuring out how you feel about Chop Chop and going on with it betting wise, because she is really supposed to get the setup. Chocolate Gelato, you know, nothing about her last race screams, I want another 16th of a mile. And she is a practical joke. They top out at shorter distances generally. So I'd be a little concerned there. She's not a horse I'm dying to bet as the favorite. But in terms of a pace-related conversation, if this isn't a fast pace, I don't know what will be.
Well, then let's talk about who among the off-the-pace candidates merit a long look, beside Chop Chop, of course, who's actually won from and performed well from different spots, from, you know, fairly up close. I suppose there's a case to be made coming out of that race in Florida. I've got to go see the replay of Atomically. This is the horse that Jose Pynchon had down at Gulfstream that ends up in the barn of Todd Pletcher via Eclipse. This is a Girvan filly, and why not? 12-1, and from a fig standpoint, makes some sense.
Yeah, I think she's one that stacks up. I think you're going to get a decent enough price. I think it's just going to be a matter of how far Luis Saez takes her off the pace. I think if he uses her a little bit to stay close, that could really cook her goose. But I think there's still a chance that she can make a little noise, no doubt about it. I thought the Choplifter might have a little bit of a look as an off-the-pace type. She's going to be a relatively big price as well, hoping that she's just allowed to sit back and make one run. I suppose there's going to be people that believe in the Dallas Stewart late-running fill-in-the-try magic and maybe give Sabra Tough a little bit of a look. She's really slow, so that's the biggest concern. But, you know, she's probably going to be ridden for a piece, and it wouldn't surprise me if she gets a little slice of it. The other horse that, you know, nothing that she's done in California has really been all that impressive, but Entelmino Lies is going to get a good setup. I mean, she's going to get the right setup. She is truly an off-the-pace horse. She handled the additional ground without issue, and she kind of did it the right way in that she stayed with her running style. She was also asked to go a lot faster early, and she kept running. So she looks a lot better on Timeform US than she does with a speed figure like a Buyer. So I think there's a little argument to be made that even though she's probably not good enough to win, she's not a bad exacta or trifecta candidate, because 8 or 10 to 1 on her is probably value.
You know, there's a case to be made, especially with Flavian Pratt getting back aboard Raging Sea, that now at 8 to 1, isn't she more attractive than she would have been otherwise if she had drawn normally?
Yeah, I mean, if she drifts up off of that, I think she could easily be the horse that ends up being forgotten. And, you know, the problem that Flavian's going to have is that the two of the three horses immediately to his inside are going to go forward. So it's just going to, you know, a 6-wide trip into that turn is very, very likely. The only thing he can do is kind of commit to really dragging out or really commit to going. And I think either way, you run a pretty significant risk. That's why I thought this draw was a real negative for her. But, you know, if we're talking about Wonder Wheel and Chop Chop, and you're going to potentially get 10 to 1 on Raging Sea, you have to let her enter into the conversation.
Well, and considering that she won her debut going 7/8, and she did it from basically a stalk and go position, I don't see why Pratt wouldn't be compelled. Chad has never struck me as the type who gives a leg up and says, "Rider like your owner." I think Chad will have very specific ideas about how to approach this. And to me, I think you take back a little bit and you gain some position at the back end of the field, and then start to pick things off on the backfield and come with one run, knowing you got the short stretch. I think you ride her like it's a 7/8 race, and you use the first 300 yards to gain a position to save ground and come with the run.
Yeah, it's also a very different situation for a juvenile fillies than we've seen in the two prior runnings at Keeneland, because, you know, Songbird totally dominated in 2015, and we had a field of 6 in 2020. So, I mean, it's generally, I feel like these mile and a 16th races at Keeneland, more often than not, the pace can get very hot because the run to the first turn is actually pretty long. And so where you want to be is really in position with about 3 to 3.5 furlongs to go, because that's when a lot of times the baton gets passed and you don't want to find yourself getting shuffled out or not being able to make a free run. And Raging Sea's a horse who probably should be able to make a free run. She might be 4 or 5 wide the whole way around there, but she'll probably get a good chance to make a free run.
The Juvenile Fillies Turf, the third race on Friday, and this is a little more amorphic in terms of a pace scenario.
Yeah, it's tricky pace-wise. You know, it doesn't look like there's an abundance of early foot. Zajera is a horse that is probably going to have to be ridden pretty aggressively from the outside in order to maintain some position. And, I mean, if I was calling the shots, I'd go. I don't think there's going to be a ton of resistance immediately to her inside coming out of the gate. And I do think that she'll be at her best being forward. She's been involved in fast-paced races in all three of her prior starts. Obviously, you're going to see Luis Saez try and go forward with Delight. I don't think they're going to mess with success in terms of what worked last time. Pleasant Passage comes in with a wire-to-wire win, but she's not fast. She's not a speed horse either. She took advantage of circumstances last time, and I think that had as much to do with some of the passivity of the riders on the second, and, well, more so the third-place horses in behind. I don't think Pratt was overly passive. As far as some of the Euros, Spirit Gal has speed, and I think the fact that they went to Santana makes it pretty clear they want to be forward. And I think the only issue that you really can concern yourself with ahead of time, that being said, Meditate is also a horse with speed as well.
Yep.
The thing you're concerned about is whether they get out of the gate, right? I mean, notoriously, some of the European horses struggle with the gate break in America. But if these horses get out of the gate, they're going to run a little more forwardly. And I think we'll have a pretty good situation in terms of the overall pace. A horse that I took more of a liking to as I went through the the process of making the line and watching some replays was G. Laurie. And G. Laurie's getting blinkers on and getting William Buick. So I'm hoping that she gets a, you know, a nice, good position, mid-pack or so. I think that she's the horse I want out of the Natalma.
Hey, Nick Hammer here. I was listening to that. You're talking about G. Laurie. Now, she comes out of the Natalma, who historically has been a pretty good race for this one. I know a few have come on and win. In fact, last year's Pizza Bianca came out of that race.
Yep.
Not much respect odds-wise for any of these. Obviously, the winner won at Boxcars, and you got G. Laurie in here, and the horse that finished second in here, Cairo Consort, with Rosario. I'm liking the numbers on those horses as far as odds-wise for making a little bit of a run there.
Yeah, and you know, the horse that I probably would have, and of course, good to talk to you, Hammer. The horse I probably would have liked to make a little shorter was either G. Laurie or Cairo Consort. The problem is that this race is loaded with horses that are going to be between 10 and 18 to 1. Right. It's just going to be that kind of race. It's and what I used as a guide there was their odds last time. And obviously, Last Call was a huge price last time. She was a maiden. She also got the best of it in terms of the trips, in my opinion, because as that race was developing with an extremely slow pace, she made this huge run around the outside on the turn, and G. Laurie got locked in traffic. So that was kind of what, hopefully that's not a little too nuanced for how the public is going to approach it. I do agree with you that if you're generally basing your approach on buyer speed figures, you're going to really find, I think you're going to take a liking to the Canadian horses. The problem for me was that Last Call looked like more of a one number kind of horse that was dismissed last time. And G. Laurie is one that still has to prove herself. So I thought there was a decent chance that they could kind of slip under the radar.
Well, that's what I figured, you know, and I respect you so much when that, and I saw the numbers come out and I'm going, what am I missing on these, on some of these horses here? But you're right. There's so many mid range horses in here. You know, some are going to be a little high, some are going to be a little low, but I always looked at that race as being okay as a lead into this race, at least the past few years anyway.
Nick, a couple of quick mentions before we talk about the juvenile, and there's a very lightly raced Euro for Richard Fahey, Midnight Mile, who's going to be 10-1. Lorden is riding, and this is an interesting horse. Usually these 6 and 7 furlong stretch out types I don't normally get excited about, but from a pedigree standpoint, out of a Galileo mare, a no-name never daughter, she intrigues me. I want to go watch that Group 3 win. I mean, it basically, you know, it's kept kind of modest company in Doncaster and Newmarket, but I want to see more of that horse. Midnight Mile might be really overlooked. And really, it doesn't this, if you want to try to simplify this, Free Look feels versatile, right? She's gotten involved in different kinds of paces, and you know, feels like she's maturing right along.
Yeah, she should get the right trip, right? I mean, she should be in a really good spot, mid pack or so. She to me is Chad Brown's really his best opportunity for a win in the 2 days, and I know I'm including Goodnight Olive in that, but yeah, she seems like a horse who can kind of make her own luck. I think she's run well pretty much every time, as you're saying, sort of regardless of pace scenario. Midnight Mile's an interesting horse, no doubt about it. I love the improvement second time out. This is not a horse that Richard Fahey just put on the plane to ride over with the Platinum Queen. I think she's a horse that really fits, and I ended up moving her odds down as I dug into that Oh So Sharp a little bit more, because it looks like it could be a race that maybe is a little bit better than you feel at first blush.
We're giving first blush to post-draw pace scenarios and how things look immediately after yesterday's establishment of the 2 days of Breeders' Cup racing. The juvenile will be the lowest price favorite of the day with Cave Rock, and it feels like not only, you know, is he fastest coming in, and not only has he been dominant, but it feels like he's got something of a pace edge on this group.
Yeah, it's just one of those fast horses that if even if he's not setting it, he's controlling it, right? And what I mean by that is he can probably let Hurricane J get the lead and then just latch onto his outside and go by him when he feels like it, you know? And so it seems like there was probably not a scenario in which Cave Rock would run into trouble in this race pace-wise, not with who was slated to run. So, yeah, he looks like a horse that's going to be exceptionally tough to beat, and I'm a big fan of this horse. I was a huge Arrogate fan, and it's nice to see. Unfortunately, he was gone too soon, but it's nice to see his horses running as well. And Georgie's Angel was a really nice filly. So this looks like a really, really good horse. And, you know, there's really no other pace pressure because National Treasure's not going to put pace pressure on Cave Rock. Right. And he's not fast enough anyway. So this feels like something that'll be relatively simple. I think the goal here is to maybe try and squeeze in and off the pace horse underneath, like Curly Jack, who I think will get a bit of a setup, because I just my blood doesn't exactly get pumping for Forte or Blazing Sevens. And they're going to be the second and third choices. I know Forte ran fine last time out. He had a great trip. He had a phenomenal setup. And Loggins did all the running in that race. So I think that's where you could maybe get a little creative here wagering wise.
Well, I felt the same way when I did the write up for our betting companion. And I used Lost Ark as that price horse. I think he's dirtied up in here, and I think he fits the same profile that we saw from Two Phils on Saturday or Sunday at Churchill. So I agree. What I ended up doing was using the two Pletchers and the two Baffords. I didn't think it had to get all that creative.
Nope, it seems relatively simple in that respect. I was a little surprised looking at the Thoroughgraphs prior, as I was making the morning line, that Cave Rock is not a layover on Thoroughgraphs. The way he is on anything pace related or buyer speed figures, it's not quite the same, not quite the fait accompli that he wins this race.
I've been making that point since last Tuesday. Let's finish up the Friday conversation with the boys' turf race. And this has been, in comparison to the girls' turf on Friday, the boys have been dominated by Euros, and I don't think they necessarily have got the same chance that they normally do. Even though there's an Aiden O'Brien with Victoria Road and Charlie Appleby with the 3-1 Silver Knot, I don't think he's modern games, is he?
No, he's probably not at that level, but he's good. He's solid. And the problem is the American contingent is just okay, right? I mean, they're not anything that's really going to bowl you over. And, you know, when you think about American horses that have won this race, like an Oscar Performance, he was a horse who had really signaled himself in the lead up to that Breeders' Cup is having a lot of quality. And I mean, with all due respect to the likes of And the Winner Is and Major Dude and I'm Very Busy, I mean, they're all fine. Pax a Wallop is probably the best California based horse to ever run in this race. And I mean, I will not sleep on this horse. This horse is very, very good.
Yep.
So I know McKinnon looked decent last year, but Paxawalop's a better horse at this stage of the game. Obviously, I made Silver Knot the favorite in large part because every Appleby runner is going to be shorter than they should be. This horse had the misfortune of losing twice to Chaldean, was actually favored both times. And it's kind of been when he wasn't expected to run as well that he's kind of put forth his best efforts. But to me, a horse like this with this pedigree, when they improve like he did going to the mile, they're supposed to be very tough. But this is a fun race because you've got some real speed. The speed horses are drawn in difficult spots towards the outside. Gaslight Dancer is going to have to go from the 14. That's going to make his job very difficult. I think you're going to get some speed from Nagarok stretching out as well. I think you're also going to see a little bit of a forward position for Curly Larry and Moe. So this feels like a race that's got to be fast. I will say that one thing about Victoria Road, and not to get overly concerned with this horse, is that it almost looked to me like they were prepping him for what they thought the opportunities would be down the line in that Group 3 last time at Chantilly, because they dragged him out of the race. And I think that that might actually work well here because they're going to go so fast. So I think Victoria Road is dangerous. On paper, he is much lesser than Silver Knot, but I'd use both.
I want to mention one big price that seems competitive, and given the pace scenario and given Luis Saez getting back aboard really good, I am not going to sit there and watch a Mike Maker horse come running late and beat me on Friday. And this horse is going to be Boxcars. And I think is very competitive, got the run over the track in the Bourbon, and is going to get, you know, potentially a nice setup again. Maybe not a horse to lean on the win end, but this is a horse that could really boost up your exotics.
Yeah, I agree. And look, 2 years ago, Mike Maker won this race with a big price. So different running style, obviously. But I think there are a lot of interesting late running types to get a piece of this. He's one of them. Reckoning Force is another one. His trip in the Bourbon was terrible. And now Blinker's going on for Brendan Walsh. I think we're going to get an improved effort. And I wouldn't be shocked if Webslinger gets a piece of this thing either. He was a horse that had a ton of trouble in his turf debut, came back and scored the upset win in the now. And he's going to get a lot of pace to run at. So he's a horse who I think could be clunking up to round out the trifecta or the super.
Well, for what it's worth, I can tell you that that the team was beside themselves after the post-entry, the first pre-entries went, because they thought they weren't going to they might not get in, and they really wanted to run. Not that the DJ team, the Greens and Mark Cassie, you know, they, of course they want to run, but they really thought that Webslinger had a look in there. Nick Tamaro with us. Let's turn our attention to Saturday, and things start off. You already tipped your hand last week about Obligatory, but let's first get a feel for what kind of a pace scenario we can expect in the Filly and Mare Sprint to start Saturday's features.
Yeah, it's great to see this race with a big field again. We had a small field last year, understandably, with Gamine being a big favorite. But now every time when we've seen big fields in this race, it's actually been the race that's led to some of the greatest amount of chaos. And that, of course, reminds you of Bar of Gold. And,
yep.
And a year later, we saw the upset from Shamrock Rose. This feels like it has to be a fast pace. With Hot Peppers drawing outside, she's got a lot of early speed, obviously. You're going to see her go forward. Echo Zulu drew the 13, so they're going to have to be aggressive with her as well. Lady Rocket has the 12, which is really unfortunate for her, too, because she wants to be forward, but she's got speed on both sides of her. So they should fly in here. I mean, how far away can Florent Giroux let them get with Slammed on the rail? Right. I mean, he's got to go as well aboard her. So that's why, yeah, I had my eye on Obligatory anyway, and put Obligatory in a fast paced race. I think you're going to like what you see.
And I'm just taking a peek here at let me get over to Saturday. Hold on, because I have not looked at this. This pace is one race that I really had not looked at. I'm just curious about...
Nick, what did you put CC at?
4-1.
That's legit.
I made CC the 4-1 second choice. Yeah, I considered making her the favorite, but the more I looked at some of the figures and the more I talked to some of the rank-and-file horse players, they were all like, oh, no, Goodnight Olive's definitely favorite in here. So that was... I don't love the inactivity for Goodnight Olive. It's obviously been a while since she ran, and I know that CC is going to be pretty embraced by the public coming off the good win at Santa Anita and having won this race last year. But I just think Goodnight Olive's last race was a little too good for her to not be favored.
No, I think that's the perfect price. I just didn't write that one down, and you did kind of an odd situation with her. A good odd. She's prepped in the exact same three races that worked last year. The Princess Rooney, the Ballerina, and the race at Santa Anita, the Chillingworth, boom, 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 and you know she's sitting on go again, and you know, thank gosh for this race, it really hit her right in the head. Although she has gone long, but that's a perfect price, I think, to start out with her. I was just curious,
Nick. We look to the turf sprint, and you remarked about the juvenile turf sprint. And the way the other day when you were looking at the potential pace scenario, and in this particular case, here's Golden Pal, and what do we make of the chances to, you know, to win a third year in a row, and to win this a second time? I don't see necessarily where there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people, you know, pressuring Golden Pal.
No, what it's really going to boil down to is how much his first step gets him an advantage. And what I mean by that is Highfield Princess actually has a lot of speed.
Right.
And I don't think she's fast enough to go with him, but it's one of those situations where, you know, there was a last time the Breeders' Cup was at Keeneland in 2020, Gamine won the filly and mare sprint. And when they came out of the gate, there was a lot of concern going into that race that Serengeti Empress might be able to wire Gamine, because Serengeti Empress was razor sharp. She was coming in off two just really sensational efforts. And Gamine drew inside of her. Well, coming out of the gate, John Velasquez rode the hair off of Gamine. And I thought, what is he doing? He's trying to go to the lead. And then he immediately took her in hand. But what he was ensuring was if Serengeti Empress was going to clear, she was going to work her ass off for it. And it's exactly what made her vulnerable. So it's a bit of a situation like that, that if Highfield Princess breaks and she offers up any kind of speed at all, she may ultimately get cleared by Golden Pal, but he will have worked much harder to do that than he's accustomed to. And I think one thing that became abundantly clear to me about Detroit is that this horse cannot rate. I mean, he will not win this race if he does not have the lead at every call. And I know he won the Troy, but, I mean, let's be real for a second. That was True Valor and Thin White Duke, right? I mean, these are way better horses than he ran into that day. Everybody is sort of I don't know, I feel like everybody I talk to is kind of on the fence with Golden Pal. You know, I don't know if maybe it was the somewhat subpar effort at Saratoga. Maybe they don't really love the Woodford last time out. I mean, this to me felt like a horse that 3 months ago we were probably looking at, you know, a low ones type of odds, right? A 6-5, 7-5, something like that. I felt pretty comfortable making him 2. I don't think he's going to go down terribly much off of that.
That opens up the door for some of the horses that might tuck up, behind the lead pair. And, I mean, who does that all include? I suppose Caravelle and actually Wesley's other horses, right? Resmi Red and Campanelle can sort of sit behind Paces. The horse that I was super impressed with, you mentioned Brendan Walsh before, that Cazadero up at the Near Arctic win was kind of an eye opener, and I'm very interested in Cazadero, and you made him 20-1. If it's not going to be the obvious here, this thing turns into Mongolian Saturday pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it could be anybody else. I mean, I know that 5.5 is quick, and he's going to have to get his engine going, but I don't see why Casa Creed can't win this race. It's just the distance to me. That's just the worry. But if Sias can work out the right kind of trip, I think he's going to get some pace in front of him. I think he's dangerous.
Well, that would be just unbelievable for Lee and for Mike Francesa and his family and everybody involved in Casa. And wow, it's a fun group, and including a lot of familiar faces and a horse that came last year to Del Mar and just missed at a nice price in Go Bears Go. Doesn't seem to be in the same kind of form. There's that Flotus, the Star Spangled Banner filly for Simon Crisford and Mr. Yoshida. You alluded to Creative Force. There's also Naval Crown. We'll get some international insight when, as soon as Qantas peels Nick Luck out of his seat on the way back from Melbourne. Let's talk about the Dirt Mile. Actually, Hammer and I spent a surprising amount of time, Nick, talking about the Dirt Mile, which got pretty intriguing. The more you looked at it. Certainly feels like this has got an honest pace or more.
Yeah, it does. I don't know how fast it'll be. It should be honest at the very least. There's not a huge run to the first turn, so I was hoping some of the speed horses would maybe draw outside and have to be used a little bit more to get a forward position, and it kind of ended up being mainly closers in three of the four outside slots. But no big deal. I think you'll get you'll certainly see Goodnight forwardly placed. I imagine Laurel River, they'll want him a little forward as well for Bob Baffert. Pipeline really can't let them get too far away. I think he probably becomes the inside speed because I don't think Slow Down Andy or Simplification are really going to be ridden all that hard to get to the first turn. So, yeah, an honest pace. I don't think that anybody was hurt by either the draw or who ended up running. I think if you liked Cody's Wish before, you probably like him still. He's a horse who's been effective in a mile, both around one and two turns, mile and a 16th, I guess I should say, around two turns. And, you know, don't discount how well he ran in that Challenger. He actually ran really well. He didn't get out of the gate all that great, and Scalding got really good in the first 6 months of 2022. So I thought Cody's Wish was an interesting horse in here. Obviously the favorite, not what I'm dying to bet necessarily, but he's a very, very solid horse who's getting better with each start.
Go to the Filly and Mare Turf. Nick Tamaro with us. We're identifying pace scenarios in the Cup. And the Filly and Mare Turf, another race where the pace is a little murky. There are some candidates, certainly, and in Italian, you know, obviously is the point. But after that, I'm not sure where to look.
So my bold prediction for this Breeders' Cup is that if a Breeders' Cup race is wired, it's in Italian wiring this race. So I'm obviously not in the Golden Pal camp, but I think the likeliest wire-to-wire winner of this, I should say of Saturday, because I think Cave Rock could end up going wire-to-wire. I don't know how much Hurricane Jane will show speed or will hold him off. But of the Saturday races, this is the most likely wire-to-wire winner to me, because there's really nobody in here who can keep up with her early. It's just going to be a matter of how fast Rosario goes, right? I mean, if he wants to let her really try and take the air out of all of them like he did in the Diana, then she can do that. And if he would rather be a little more judicious on the front end like he was last time, she can do that too. So it's just the mile and 3/16. That's really the only concern, because she's going to take a punch late from some of these European horses. Obviously, Nashua is very, very talented, and Nashua's trip last time out was not ideal. She made the lead way too early. Above the Curve will come with a nice late run. You've got some domestic horses who I think you can respect, but she is very dangerous on the front end, and this is one of the only races on Saturday that doesn't shape up as being a particularly fast pace.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression.
You know, you brought up the distance of this race,
yeah,
Nick. At a mile and 3/16, this race has changed, ironically, for a Breeders' Cup race. It's been a mile and an eighth, it's been a mile and a quarter, it's been a mile and 3/8. And the mile and 3/16, it's only a 16th of a mile, you know, more than that Diana, where she went 9 and change. And like you said, she can do, she wants to say, let's go, boys and girls, try and catch me. She can do that too. So I had this race on Steve's pick, on Steve's review, and I had the same deal as you. If someone's going to do it, it's going to be her. I guess there's just nobody that can keep up with her if she wants to go on the engine.
Turning to the sprint.
Go ahead.
Well, let's turn to the sprint.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to really make much of an effort to really beat her up on the front end. But turning to the sprint, obviously, I mean, this race really changed with Jack Christopher not going. It made Jackie's Warrior's task a lot easier. That's why I had tweeted yesterday that I was going to make Jackie's Warrior 9-5 with Jack Christopher in the race, and I made him 4-5 without Jack Christopher. Obviously, Jackie's Warrior really only has to deal with Super Ocho early. And I don't know how much of a mission they're going to go on with Super Ocho. The one thing I will say is that Jackie's Warrior has been involved in very, very few fast-paced races in the last year. And the only one was last year's sprint. So, you know, unless you believe that maybe a more kind of gingerly campaign Jackie's Warrior is likely to be better suited to this race, given his 2022, he's not a horse that's been able to look another horse in the eye and go on and win in the last year. Now, he did that against Life is Good last year, but that also came during a stretch where every Steve Asmussen runner was running out of their skin, including Jackie's Warrior. And I don't know if any of them ever quite got to that level again. I know a lot of them have run extremely well, but, you know, I'm thinking about like Midnight Bourbon, Echo Zulu, Gunite. There were a lot of horses that ran extremely well. So I'm not buying Jackie's Warrior just bowling over this field on the front end. I think he's the likeliest winner by far, but I think Kamari's interesting. Uh-huh. I think that this is one of those where they're galloping out in this race and you say to yourself, damn it, Wesley knew the whole time. Right. I mean, this horse is better at Keeneland. She didn't draw all that great, but I don't know how concerned I am about it. She's speedy enough to get close. There are a lot of pokey horses immediately to her outside that aren't really going to have any speed. And obviously the horse to her inside is going to have no speed either. So I think she could get a really good trip sitting third, especially if she can angle out and get off the toward being towards the inside. I think she's very dangerous. I think pace wise, she looks like a good fit as well.
Yeah, we brought to that conclusion. We arrived after the figs came that we understood what Wesley's concept was, directing her toward this race. Turning to the mile, Nick, and this is a race that, you know, has got potential for chaos. It doesn't necessarily have a blistering pace. I mean, there are some years that we do get a serious pace in the mile. This feels kind of like a square pace.
Yeah, it's dependent on a couple of things. One of which is, are Beyond Brilliant and Smooth Like Straight really going to hook up? Is Pogo going to have the same speed in America as he has had overseas? And how aggressive are they going to be on King Cause? I think this is going to be a fast-paced race. I think the European horses want to be forward, like Pogo. I think Dream Loper really doesn't want to be that far off of it either. But I think when you couple it all together, it becomes one of those high-pressure races that really doesn't have like a runoff speed horse. You just have a lot of horses that want to be forward. And I can't imagine, I'm sure the connections are really excited about getting a horse like King Cause into the race. I imagine if you're going to go, you want to use the tactics that got you there, right? And so they're going to want to be forward. So I think it'll be honest at the very least. And I don't think that anybody is going to be hurt by what should go on. I even think that a mare like Regal Glory is dangerous. Uh-huh. Because she's quick enough to get into position, and she's going to be a little bit off the pace. As far as the Europeans go, I'd be remiss not to mention that Kinross drew poorly, and he's got speed as well. So, I mean, he can't let them get too far away. I think the one line that I am probably going to think in retrospect I should have made lower is Modern Games. But Modern Games' last race was not good. And I wonder how many sharp players are going to say, why did he run that horse there? You know, it was such a good setup to come in off of Woodbine. I know in Appleby we trust, but there are a few holes you can poke in Modern Games, and I think there are enough interesting alternatives in this race to really give people other options. So pace-wise, I think it's going to be very honest.
Well, and that opens the door for Domestic Spending, who's going to drop out of it anyway. I don't think he's killed by the 14-hole either. Let's get to the Distaff, the late pick three, and the Distaff, the Turf, and the Classic, Nick. And I think we know that Society is going to lead him into the turn, and from there we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, this race is just so interesting. I can't wait. It's probably the one I'm anticipating really most of the weekend, save Flight Line, because you've got all the heavy hitters, you know. And now instead of being the five and six horse fields that we saw all year, there's eight, and there's pace. There's real pace in there. Society's sort of taking the Latruska role, and she's good. You know, she's good enough to win this race. She is good enough to go wire to wire. She's going to have to run at least as well as she did last time. But that was an eye-opening performance. It was much better than I think I gave her credit for immediately. So I envision that the way Timeform US laid this race out is exactly how it's going to go. You're going to have Society isolated on the lead. You're going to have Search Results chasing her. You're going to have Nest chasing both of them. And then it's just going to be a matter of who pulls the trigger when. And what has dogged Search Results in the times that she's been beaten by Malathot, and when she was beaten by Malathot and Clairiere on Belmont Day, is that she has had to do so much heavy lifting. She has had to spy the speed horse, take over, and then hold all the fresh challengers off. Well, this might be the right scenario for her, because I don't know if Society is exactly going to want to fly. And if they don't go all that fast, and she's a fresher horse when she hits the front at the quarter pole, she might be a little tougher to handle. That being said, you know you're going to get a big late run from Malathot. You're going to get a big late run from Clairiere. Don't be surprised if you see Malathot under a ride at the half-mile pole. You know, she's been a lot more tractable as a four-year-old than she was as a three-year-old. As a three-year-old, you thought John Velasquez was just going to give up at some point, just pumping away the entire way. But, yeah, this is fascinating from a pace perspective, from a class perspective. I mean, it's just got everything you would want. And I don't remember a distaff having this kind of depth for this size field in a long time.
I said the same thing. We turned to the turf, and I made note of a dozen horses that participated on the weekend at the top of the show 2 years ago. One of them was Bye Bye Melvin. He was in the Bryan Station, however. He draws the one, which I'm sure Graham Motion and Fergal Lynch are delighted with, because we know he's going to the front. After that, a couple different horses are candidates to set up shop. Three Turner, Nick, how does this unfold?
Yeah, Bye Bye Melvin, he ran in that race. It was won by what George Weaver's horse, like a million
yes,
to one.
Yes.
Ever dangerous, yeah. Yeah, he'll go. I mean, as you said, he'll be on the lead. I think you'll have Channel Maker chasing him. Nation's Pride is proven in a couple of starts in America that he's not slow. He can be forward. I don't think Highland Chief will be that far off of it. He's been at his best when he's been a little bit more engaged in the opening stages. So it should be an honestly run race. Of the two Applebees, Rebel's Romance probably wants to come from a little bit farther off of it. So I think he'll be somewhat taken in hand. So nobody looks to be in a particularly strong spot pace-wise. And if you like a late-running closer, I don't think there's any reason to be worried.
Well, and also mid-pack types. Yesterday we talked to Phil D'Amato, and he got us excited about Gold Phoenix, who's got a big, big late kick. Getting Flavian Pratt back aboard doesn't bother me either, and he's going to be 25-1. That gets us to the classic, Nick. And
Yeah. I think it'll be just as it seems on paper, right? Life is Good is going to go. And Flightline's going to chase him. And at some point, Flightline is going to put in a real bid. And it's going to be a question of how quickly Life is Good capitulates. And we've seen Flightline do this to every single horse he's ever run against. And when they are confronted by him, they're usually pretty quick to fold. You know, the one thing about this race, and I saw some opining about Life is Good being the third choice on the morning line, and on the network that carries some of the Breeders' Cup races, how can he be less than the third choice? More importantly, how the hell can anybody bet on Life is Good in this race? If you're betting on Life is Good, you're betting on him staving off Flightline, putting Flightline away, and then holding off fresh challenges from horses like Taba and Epicenter. Right? I mean, I'm not being smartass or anything. That's impossible. On paper, at a distance that he probably doesn't want. So to me, the result of this race is very clear. Either we're going to finish off coronating Flightline as one of the best horses probably of the last 25 years or more, or we're going to see one of these upstart three-year-olds really put it together when push comes to shove. Taba is the likelier candidate to me of those two, but this is a very simple race. I mean, it looks like,
yeah.
To me, it should play out exactly the way it looks on paper.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. Nick, thanks so much. We'll do some final analysis Thursday and Friday.
Sounds great, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. There's your morning line. There's your everything. And good idea to see about how to approach the work that you're doing, probably starting right now. Andy is going to join us. We're late getting to Andy, and he's only got about now Andy's going to be difficult to get to at this point because he's heading out. Nick was 20 minutes. He pushed us back 20 minutes, which hurt.
Well, do you think he's qualified to do the morning line?
He's unbelievable.
He is. He is something. He can break down a race faster than anyone you've seen. And so when you see those odds, you know what's gone into it. And, wanted to just explain, probably most people know this, but the job of the morning line odd maker is a little different. Some people get confused. It's not to pick the winner, as you know. It's to pick how he thinks the public is going to bet. I mean, he might like a horse that he's going to bet on, but he thinks it's going to be 8-1. Just because you like him, you're not going to make him the favorite. So it's a difficult task when you also, like to make a wager or two. So you have to keep that in mind. But, all the things that go into you and I when we go to make a bet, what are we looking at? Why are we betting this horse? The jockey, the trainer, the sheet number, this, that, or the other, the local qualification. So Nick is I think he makes the morning line at Houston as well, and probably another track, but I'm glad he got the call here to do it. So what you see there is it's going to be pretty close, and guess what, he's going to be wrong a couple times too, but you can see the thought that went into every line he does.
Big time. Let's do this. We're 15 minutes into hour three. Let's take the break. Actually, we got the window here, and that'll give us a chance to reset after a terrific 45 minutes, almost an hour with Nick, and that should have gone a long way to giving you an approach to the 14 races. And we even hinted a little bit at the undercard. We're live at Keeneland. Morning has flown by, which is not a surprise at all, and I see some blue sky now, and everything that they could have wanted is coming to pass in terms of the rest of the week. Some racing tomorrow and Thursday across state at the Ville, at Churchill. Haven't looked at those cards actually, and then back here Friday and Saturday, and then back to Churchill. If the rest of it wasn't enough, Keeneland and then the opening day at the Downs, Stars of Tomorrow card, and so much more. All right, back after this, Breeders' Cup 2022, and it's brought to you really by all of our sponsors, and particularly the racetracks that visit with us all through the course of their meets. Kentucky Downs and Remington this year, Indiana as well, Canterbury. Did I say Remington already?
No.
Remington. There you go. There's the racetrack. Right, Canterbury, Indy, Remington, Kentucky Downs, Indianapolis. That's it. That's Sam Houston. We'll throw Sam Houston in too, right? Because Sam Houston, we talked to them about being kind of everything culminating here at Breeders' Cup. All right. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals. With a proven track record of